Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis to what's going on in the news media these days from the perspective of some veteran journalists in New York's capital region, and we hope that you will join us. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now with the Upstate American on Substack. My colleagues here, Mike Spain and Barbara Lombardo. Mike Spain, formerly my colleague, the associate editor of the Times Union. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
And what's in your mind today?
Well, I'm very concerned about AI and the easy creation of very, very troubling deep fake audio and video that is so good, so to speak, that it makes even experts have difficulty telling if it's real or make-believe.
What are the implications for that of journalism? My goodness. Barbara Lombardo, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy. What's on your mind?
I first want to say that I really am here. This is me speaking.
And you're not a deep fake.
In addition to that, I'd like to talk about the coverage of the Pentagon, the New York Times' lawsuit regarding its being shut out of the coverage there, and how even though you don't get a press pass, you are media's publishing great news.
Yeah.
Not great news, but news very well.
Yeah, publishing great journalism anyway. Yeah, great topics. We will get to those. I was taken by something that I think will resound for those of us who have been in newsroom leadership with the interesting thing. Over the past week, the New York Times published an interview with its executive editor, Joe Kahn, a Q&A that they published online. And he was asked to describe the hardest part of his job right at the end of the interview. And he said this. He said, "The most challenging part of the job is producing an independent news report when some readers really want a more partisan one." And that strikes me as so much the dilemma that everybody in the reality-based media, that would be what we did, has to confront right now. You know, it doesn't matter to Fox News. Bias is its brand promise, really, right? But even at the local and regional outlets, like those that we in the studio work for, the new reality is that news consumers want to be comforted by coverage that conforms to their own point of view. And that's challenging because the world we're covering is no longer in balance. Honestly, it's not. One side in the political debate, which becomes a cultural debate, does not deal so much in facts as it does in feelings. The president is a norm-busting dealer in provocation. He's totally unmoored from any sense of responsibility to the truth. And journalism, as a craft that is based on striving to understand what is true and then share that reality with our audience. If that is the goal of your independent news report, you're going to smack into the president's truth-averse partisans in your readership, your audience, constantly. And you'll likewise tick off the president's opponents, though, if you don't focus your reporting constantly on his aversion to the truth. And so a dispassionate news report will seem to many people on each side to be an inadequate response to this challenged reality. So I worry constantly that reality-based journalism, what we all practice, what we talk about every week in this program, is really becoming irrelevant. I mean, I wonder if this emerging ecosystem of intentionally biased reporting is going to be the norm, and if that is going to ultimately spell the doom of real journalism. How's that for cheerful?
Okay, this is the real Barbara Lombardo. I think that there's a difference between reporting news accurately that people aren't going to like and reporting news in a biased fashion. There are plenty of outlets that people can turn to for comfort. I certainly do that. Sometimes I listen to the uncomfortable one to hear what they're saying or not saying, and then I'll listen to the ones that I tend to agree with, and I might learn something new and it affirms what I believe. I'll turn to the New York Times when I want the straight news. And sometimes what's appearing in could be by headline selection, story selection, the presentation. I can cite articles where they've been coming down, what you want to say, hard on the president, but only because they're reporting accurately what's happening.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there is a difference between fact-based reporting and bias reporting. And, you know, an awful lot of what we do read in our local newspapers and on our local websites and here in the local media is just that. It's fact-based reporting. It's about weather. It's about accidents. It's about arrests because of crimes and other tragedies and maybe some positive things along the way. And when what you're talking about, I think, Rex, is it's politics or covering government, covering the leadership of our entities, our city, state, and country, and how they're doing, what they're doing, and holding them accountable against a set of facts. You know, there's a cliche now, but I've heard people say, you know, it's not about right or left; it's about right or wrong. What if, when you do the very unbiased reporting that you referred to, Barbara, that it has horrific, troubling information in it about people you like or people you trust or people you follow or people you voted for? It offends you, perhaps. And the funny thing is, I don't think, you know, as much as you say, Barb, that you try to listen to the alternative point of view now and then or read some of the alternative press just to see the perspective and kind of put everything into a bigger picture, I don't think everybody does it. I think that's a rarity. I encourage it, and I do the same. I like to hear what the other side is saying, how they're portraying it. If there's a big breaking news political scandal, I'll switch over to Fox News and see how they portray it, if they portray it at all. But I think the general public wants to be affirmed. You said that, Rex. You want to be comforted with the knowledge that they're right and everybody else is wrong who disagrees with that.
And because they aren't getting that from the mainstream media, maybe that's why we have just seen new statistics saying the percentage of U.S. adults who say they follow the news at least most of the time, all or most of the time, has dropped. In 2016, it was just over half. Now it's only about 36% who say they're following the news. Maybe it's because people are dissatisfied that the news doesn't always please them that they're dropping out. And maybe therefore, you know, and young people, we've seen this a lot from young people who years ago were saying, you know, well, if the news is important, it'll find me. And now aren't young people, I mean, Barb, you teach journalism at UAlbany, young people are probably not following the news closely, right?
Some are, many are not. That has not changed. I think that's human nature. If it's not something that's important to them, highly relevant to them, and they're not news junkies, they're probably not following the news hardly at all. But some of my students are very well aware of what's going on in the news and in different genres. They might be sports and arts and politics.
And are their sources legitimate? Are they? Yeah. What kind of sources are they using?
So most of them claim to look at the New York Times. I think some are relying on AI news.
Yeah.
That comes up quick.
Now, you were concerned about that. You were mentioning the AI threat, Mike.
Well, if you've ever Googled anything in the last 6 months, most of the time it's a summary, an AI summary that Google gives you that is usually based on a story that it links to below, but sometimes it combines two or three things and tries to present it in a coherent way. And, you know, if you're trying to buy a new dishwasher, I suppose that's really helpful. You know, they'll skim over the different reviews of the brands and tell you the ones that are most often cited as the best. But I've also had it be completely wrong.
You're right.
You know, where I'll ask it something and say, that's not true. This is true. And I know the other thing is true. It's just that they hadn't gotten enough information from their, you know, reaching out to find out about this breaking news that I wanted to know about. And they do get it wrong. And then there's this other aspect of it, and that's called the deep fake. And that is the ability of AI to assist in the creation of audio and video that can be very convincing. And people use it for funny jokes. I know somebody who was going to go see Wicked, and they sent a picture of themselves bright green in the picture. Guess what movie I'm going to see? And they had AI do that. That's a lot of fun.
That's clever.
Yeah. Right.
You could do that with Photoshop about 30 years ago.
Right. Well,
not as convincing.
Right, right. And, you know, it's fun, and you can make a video that has you flying over New York City and dropping fecal material on protesters.
Who would do such a thing as that?
I can't imagine, but it's possible.
A rich real estate developer.
From Queens.
Yes, right. Mm. In that case, though, I think it was pretty obvious that it was a deep fake, and he wasn't flying an airplane over, a MiG over the city of New York. But there are other deep fakes. Like, I saw a news report about a disease that somebody was promoting a cure for, and they had Oprah Winfrey and some other celebrity saying, I've used it and it's really worked. It looked just like Oprah Winfrey saying it, but it wasn't her. She didn't say it. She said, I had nothing to do with that at all. But you watch this on your phone or on your computer, and if you're suffering or know somebody suffering from that malady, you'll be very, very encouraged to go and pursue that and maybe get cheated out of some money for a useless medication. They even had the physician, who's a well-known national figure for this advocate for this particular disease to find solutions, say they had him saying that this solution, that this product was working. And to me, a layperson, it was impossible to tell. And that's scary.
So you can't trust your eyes anymore. Doesn't that mean that it's going to further erode trust in the news media? Isn't this stuff going to replace the news media?
I hope not, but I'm very pessimistic about this. It's virtually impossible. Even the experts, they're having trouble. The tech people who are trying to come up with ways to detect deepfakes are having trouble keeping up with the people who are creating deepfakes.
It's not a winning battle just yet. The technology to detect deepfakes needs to be there.
Well, meanwhile, the battle's not even being joined. I mean, it is a fact, not an attack on the Trump administration. It is a fact to say the Trump administration is pulling back from regulating AI. They are rather encouraging it and saying, go for it, do whatever you like. And I have to feel as though, notwithstanding what free speech concerns we might have about that, I do have to think that a more thoughtful administration in Washington would be taking this threat seriously and would be grappling with this issue. How do we confront the fact that humans will not be able anymore just using their senses to tell what's real and what's not?
Yeah, it's already happening, of course. Something can come out, like some foolish comment by a politician, and they can say, I never said that. That was a deep fake.
Right.
And the general public might say, well, that could be. I mean, do you trust it? I mean, where did you read it? Oh, you read it in the New York Times. Well, you know, they're biased. You know, it has sort of a downward spiral.
And it's a challenge for even the mainstream media to make sure that they're not inadvertently doing that. So there's, I think, a lot of pressure that should be placed on mainstream media to make sure that they are not getting accidentally sucked into that, which has on rare occasion happened.
Yes, where the media have been deluded believing something because they didn't check it thoroughly. Meanwhile, most of the approach of the mainstream media to AI is to assure that they are not financially disadvantaged by it. You know, numerous news organizations have filed lawsuits against AI companies, OpenAI, Microsoft, Google, primarily alleging copyright infringement, unfair competition. The core issue is that the unauthorized use of copyrighted news content to train the large language models, right? And so that's an issue that is going forward, and that seems to be what's drawing the attention of the big media companies, as opposed to how do we protect our journalists from being duped?
Yeah, it cost a newspaper or a news organization over years, you know, millions of dollars to gather and keep in their archives all the work that they've done. And letting AI bots go in and vacuum all that out so it can give a summary to somebody about a news event or a historical event or anything it's stealing. Certainly, that's my opinion, and that is certainly why. And it's a copyright violation. And that's why the major news organizations don't want to let AI come in and take their archives. And that means if they can't get into those trustworthy and reliable source archives, they're going to be going to Reddit and they're going to be going to Google. You know, they're going to be essentially looking for information that is on social media, which we all know can be sometimes misleading.
We did an exercise in class, looked at video that was a fake claiming racism. and the person is explaining how this person was really an FBI agent and they were being harassed by the local police. And it was very convincing enough that my students all thought that this was real, because even the message, because the message had a kernel of reality to it. Mm-hmm. And so the video looked real. And then we looked at another video, which was almost the same thing, slightly different circumstances. Whoever's doing these videos, now they have, instead of a woman FBI agent at a coffee shop, the next one is a male FBI agent trying to get into his apartment, and he's stopped. And we looked at the clues to see that this was fake. For instance, the actual video part of it was only 15 seconds long, which is, I guess, how much you could do it for free. The voice, doing the voiceover, sounded like AI instead of a real person. And then once you saw two of these, you realized that somebody was just basically doing the same stuff over and over. But once you examined it, it was like, yeah, this is not real.
Right.
But these other ones are much more convincing.
Some of them are very convincing, and it's very hard to tell what's real. And meanwhile, of course, the real news, the news organizations that strive very hard to do the right thing, what, again, the term we use would be reality-based reporting, are being attacked by the White House, by the Pentagon. You were mentioning, Barbara, the lawsuit now. The Times is suing the Pentagon, right, over mm-hmm. the press access rules, basically kicking out the Pentagon press corps and putting in their place the right-wing influencers and so on. This is part and parcel of the administration's campaign against real reporting.
I'm concerned about the lawsuit's success, considering that the administration had already been given the green light to kick out whoever you want from your press briefings in the White House.
In effect.
That was after the Associated Press refused to rename the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf of America, as the president edicted back when he first became.
Edicted. That's good. I think that's a pretty good verb. You know, but that case remains pending. The administration has so far been allowed to go forward, but we'll see about that.
Right. But in this particular lawsuit, the New York Times has filed, and the news came out this week, it is saying that by requiring any member of the press corps in the Pentagon itself, in the military press coverage of the military press corps, that they sign documents attesting to not even asking or seeking information unless it was already approved for release by the Pentagon's press office. And what that ended up doing when that was required back in October, every major news organization, including Newsmax and Fox News, refused to sign it. So now their seats are being filled by people like Laura Loomer and Matt Gaetz, and people who have
these, and the pillow guy.
And the pillow guy, Mike Lindell.
Great reporter there.
And they're now part of the Pentagon press corps.
Yeah, and that is a big distinction that's important to make, that one was being able to sit there and listen and ask questions, and the other one is the added level of having to sign basically a loyalty oath that's going to get you and your organization in trouble. It's totally counter to what freedom of the press is about.
But hasn't this sort of backfired? I mean, has it not made the mainstream press even more aggressive? I mean, look at this coverage of the double tap, as they call it, off the South American coast, where the Secretary of War, we're supposed to say, Mr. President, is under fire for this.
Yeah, that was great reporting by the Washington Post. They quoted several high-level sources who say they heard Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense, War, whatever.
Pentagon boy.
Right. Say, I don't want any survivors. And then the video that some of these witnesses who spoke to the Times without being named by the Washington Post, they said they watched the video and there were two people hanging on to debris. And following the Pentagon, the Defense Secretary's order, they were shot and killed and destroyed by our military. And, you know, that's a war crime, a violation of the Geneva Conventions and all international standards and U.S. law.
And counter totally to what Hegseth said initially, this is all fake. None of this really happened. What are you even talking about? It's encouraging that there are people within the Pentagon who know this is important and will leak the information.
At their peril. Of course, because they may well be subjected to lie detectors, determine if they've been the source of information. And we have to say that there is some bravery going on. An awful lot of people have left the government rather than subject themselves to this kind of approach to management.
Yeah, and the The other worry I have is that, yeah, it was great reporting, sourced reporting that the Washington Post did, just like they did back during the days of Watergate that made them so successful. But when you rely on unnamed sources, you're going to make mistakes. Woodward and Bernstein made mistakes. They quoted people who were wrong, or they misunderstood these unnamed sources, and they got misinformation in there, and then they had to retract it. When that happens, your credibility goes down. So, you know, hearing something from unnamed sources and reporting that is good when you have no other access to the right information, but getting it from the horse's mouth is much more authentic.
Right, but the horse wasn't going to be honest. So that even if they had had their press passes, they still would have been relying on leaks. And you're right, the bravery of people who are doing the right thing and in speaking to the credible press.
Well, you worked in Washington, Rex. I mean, certainly you know that any government office or any politician's office, they want to put out the best information. They don't want to put out all the information. They want to reflect a positive perspective. But that's not unusual, and that's what worries me about this lawsuit. It seems like part of this claim by the New York Times is that they're trying to muzzle the press and not let them get all the information. Well, I mean, politicians and government agencies have done that forever.
That's right. What's interesting is that it is the norms that have been violated by the Trump administration and continue to be, that it's not just only putting forth your best foot. It is lopping off the truthful foot. You know, the White House now has launched a new website that calls out what the Trump administration claims to be fake news. They have this big banner across the top that says misleading, biased, exposed. This is an official government website. And what they're doing is they're putting up news stories that in any way seem to disadvantage the president and claiming that it's misleading and biased, as I have no respect at all for the White House press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, who gets up there in front of the media with a nice cross necklace on her chest every day and lies blatantly. Sorry, but it does offend me given my religious background. And now they're doing this website that calls out honest reporting. Why is there not a response to this from decent people who are on the president's political team? Why is everybody just kowtowing to this?
They're gone. They were there the first Trump administration, and some have been there during this one, but they figured out how to get rid of this problem of people from your own staff disagreeing with you, and that is you only hire sycophants, people who will agree with you and praise you and say, this is great. We saw a video this week of a cabinet meeting that went on for like 3 hours where the president sat there while people said, you are the greatest president we've ever had. You are the greatest president in
history. And he didn't hear it because he was sleeping through most of it. As you can see.
That's another bad story.
and it was not fraudulent video. It was real, watching him nodding off.
Yeah, when you mentioned, Rex, about the government website, it wasn't too long ago that in training reporters and in training journalism students how to tell whether something on the World Wide Web is legitimate, you would teach to look at the suffixes on the URLs. Was it .org?
Right.
Or .com, which are going to be, they might be nonprofits, but they still could have a bias. It might be a business. They still could have a bias. The ones that you could rely on better would be .edu.
A university.
And .gov.
And .gov.
And now I worry about .edu if they're kowtowing to demands to change what they have on their site. And certainly the .gov that used to be a go-to place for reliability.
Just neutral information. Yeah,
I think that there's a great danger when we've lost any capacity to trust what the government says. And I certainly feel that way myself. And you don't feel that way about the press. We talked last week on this show about the importance of maintaining independence from your sources. And I just point out an interesting video that we've seen with Donald Trump playing golf with Brooks Koepka, the professional golfer, with Wayne Gretzky, the hockey legend, and the fourth in the foursome was Brett Baer, the Fox News host, who is supposedly the straight news anchor at Fox. The president does a halfway decent chip, and Brett cheers. Hey, this is great. This is not decent.
Yes, I agree. But we have evidence just this past week about how the former president of Honduras wrote a letter to President Trump saying he was wrongfully convicted and sent to prison for allegedly bringing tons of cocaine into the country and also money laundering. And he was arrested and was in a U.S. prison in North Carolina. And he wrote this obsequious letter to the president, and he got out. He got a pardon. So Brett Baer may know that the best way to get information out of this president is to just compliment his chips when he's playing golf and play up to him and play him like a fiddle. I mean, I don't know what else. You know, I mean, did you ever hear of a reporter kind of playing up to a politician a little bit to get comments from them?
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't want to sound like I'm defending the Fox News reporter.
You make a good point, Mike. It's a matter of degrees, isn't it? I mean,
it's all about norms and degrees. You're exactly right. And so much of this Pentagon case with the Washington Post, I'm sorry, the New York Times, the lawsuit, is these are all within the norms. They're not spelled out in law currently. They're not spelled out in the First and the Fifth Amendment.
You're right. By the way, as we go out, I just want to make one interesting point here. A few weeks ago, we had on this show a guest, Mitra Kalita, who used to be the managing editor of the Los Angeles Times and now is doing this thing called URL Media. She has a bunch of websites that are trying to speak to specific communities, trying to reach individual communities. And they just got a $5 million grant from the Knight Foundation, which is one of the great funders of nonprofit journalism. And I just think this is a very interesting development in the context of perhaps the future of the media is actually in serving individual communities and trying to build scalable, sustainable ecosystem that goes to smaller communities so that they can each be served. We'll just keep an eye on it. Just thought that folks might like to know that this media outlet that we talked about in this program has gotten a little bit of support. That's all we have time for today. Mike Spain.
It went so fast.
How about that? Barbara Lombardo. And I'm Rex Smith. We are grateful to the producer of the Media Project, Dave Cassina. And we thank you folks for joining us this week on the Media Project.
Rage, ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and Mike Spain, former associate editor of the Times Union. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.